Alrighty, welcome to another episode of Constructed Resources. BK took a week off last week, so we weren't able to get the show together or something along those lines. But we're back. And what we wanted to talk about this week is Standard 2022. We've got an almost unprecedented occurrence happening, which is Wizards decided not to rotate out Throne of Eldraine until, well, when they said they would. But everyone was just so sick of playing with Throne cards as well as Theros and Ikoria, but mostly Throne, that they rotated it themselves. Wizards does support, of course, Standard 2022 with a best of one cube, but for the most part, it's just people don't want to play current Standard. I've never seen this happen right on the heels of a new set release. So we're going to talk about what is Standard 2022, if you've been hearing about it and you don't know. We're going to talk about what's going on in the format, and we're going to kind of just give you this overview of the thing that people seem to be playing, even to some degree more so than Standard, at least when it comes to big organized events. So that's what we've got in store for you. Of course, this show is brought to you by ChannelFireball.com, and you can head on over to ChannelFireball.com to pick up all the cards you need for, well, for Standard 2022, current Standard, modern, anything at all. Plus, of course, cards from Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, pretty sweet set. So head on over to ChannelFireball.com, and if you pick something up, use the code Sierra. It'll help support this fine podcast. BK, how's it going?
It's good, yeah. It's good to be back. And yeah, I mean, obviously the real reason we're doing this is that you have the Gauntlet coming up and you don't want to give your thoughts on this current Standard format. You'll only discuss future ones.
Yeah, I'm really hiding my technology of the format I haven't played a game of in since, well, I got shellacked at the last league weekend.
So I guess one thing we could do is, Luis, I could put you on the spot. We didn't discuss if we were going to do this, but one thing that is worth mentioning is that the prize pool for Worlds got increased right after you came just short of qualifying for Worlds. So how are we doing?
Just short? Oh, yeah, I was one match short. Yeah, so I would say just short is accurate.
Yeah.
I am happy the prize pool got kind of restored to its previous balance, actually slightly higher than before, which is kind of cool. I'm happy for the folks who are going to get those that prize money. Of course, I'm disappointed that I'm not one of those folks, though I do have a chance in the LPL Gauntlet. Of course, I was in a much better position near the end of the Rivals League. But overall, this is good for Magic players, more money in Magic players' pockets as opposed to Hasbro's. I'm obviously going to always be in support of that, though I can't say that I was having a good time when I ended up just a tiny bit short. And then they're like, oh, and everyone who plays in Worlds is going to get $50,000 right off the top. And it's like, oh, I guess I hope I play at Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of played out in the way that always seemed a little scary in the sense of, you were one match short, but it wasn't like it was one more match this weekend. It was literally one more match in so many weekends, and it was all of the times that you lost. And it's not like that's sort of unfair in the sense, but it's like in these weekends when, you know, you're having a bad weekend, you don't have, and you know, you had one or two, you kind of like had some weekends it's where you spiked and then a couple where you bricked. And it's like in these weekends where it's like, oh, my record's like, you know, 4-7, but it just turns out that it's like this match that you're playing is still absolutely vital. And that's a tough thing to psych yourself up for. And something I would hope to see a little bit different and shifted away from in the future. It's definitely okay to like make every match worth something, but making it so that like the matches when you have a good deck worth just as much as the weekends where it's just like, oh man, I kind of got it wrong. I don't know. It's not exactly how it was in the past anyway, when the Pro Tours were around. It was much more like, oh, it really matters when you're doing well if you can beat the other people who have also done well.
Well, the good news is I don't think playing matches for stakes is going to be an issue in the future, since you know, currently we don't have any avenue for that. So jeez. So really got around that problem very nicely.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I have been you know, disappointed that even though we're certainly like, it's not like full paper play is coming back, I wish there was a little bit more like, well, now that we're not so focused on the MPL, here's some cool new opportunities that our team has time to provide to players. And maybe we'll get some of that soon, but certainly hasn't come along quite yet. Nonetheless, this is a pretty future-looking episode, so let's stay on the optimistic side and assume that by the time Standard actually rotates, maybe we'll get some good news on that front.
Yeah, I mean, and let's kick things off by explaining what Standard 2022 is. I mean, the name gives you some hints. It is basically what Standard is going to look like when everything rotates out in September. So that's Throne of Eldraine, Theros Beyond Death, Ikoria, and Corset 2021. So currently the format's comprised of Zendikar Rising, Kaldheim, Strixhaven School of Mages, and of course Dungeons & Dragons Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. The one thing that's different from this format that people are currently playing and what actual Standard 2022 or Standard in September is going to look like is we don't have the set that's going to prompt that rotation. Innistrad Midnight Hunt, I believe, is what you told me it was. So if it's wrong, it's on you. So we have most of a format missing the last set, but the real key here is that people do not want to play and lose to the same cards they've been losing to for the past 2 years. That's right. Really it. Like, how many times can you get Ember Cleaved? You know, how many times can you get Bone Crusher Gianted or die to a Lovestruck Beast? And it's just, the answer is for most people, like, yeah, too many. So at this point, we've got a best of one queue on Arena, and not best of three, so that's going to be important, but a best of one queue on Arena, plus a lot of the third-party tournament organizers, like the Inside Esports, like 5Ks, I know Hoogland has been running these, have all been switched to Standard 2022. The people who have, like, the highly enfranchised players who are motivated to go out and, like, navigate MTG Melee and Discord and sign up for these tournaments, they have voted with their feet, and people would prefer to play a new format and not the same format. And that's always largely going to be true near the end of a rotation, right? Like, the big rotation at the end of every year. But it's even more true now because of how much of a shadow Throne of Eldraine has cast over constructed formats for the past couple years. So I can't blame them. I'm on the same page. I am not interested in playing the standard. I'm still crossing my fingers that the MPL and Rivals Gauntlets will be switched to Standard 2022, but I don't know. Maybe that's a tough ask. I'm not sure. But in any case, we wanted to dive into the format because it's a format with actual cool stuff going on, which Standard hasn't really had for a while. So let's start breaking down kind of what's going on in this format and answer some questions that have come up as we've done our research here.
Yeah. So first off, I think I agree with everything that you said. And even if you're not somebody who's particularly interested in, maybe you don't play Arena or you're not interested in playing this format on Arena, hopefully this information will still be useful as you're trying to get a beat on what's going to be good in the future in the fall. And in a lot of ways, because this format is not so much in the shadow of some of the companions and the Thrones of Eldraine of the world, we get to get a little bit of a better peek about what's good in Adventures of the Forgotten Realms. Looking in terms of what impact has been had on Standard proper from Adventures of the Forgotten Realms, not a whole lot. I mean, there's a couple of cards that are showing up, and Mono Green, I would say, is the deck that's sort of gotten the biggest boost from all of this. But otherwise, like the Standard challenges this past weekend with Adventures of the Forgotten Realms, we got some Dimir Rogues, some Esper Doom Foretold, some Sultai's, Nigh Adventures. Not exactly groundbreaking stuff here. But as we look forward towards Standard 22, I don't think there's anything better to start with, Luis, than to talk about the one card that's already been banned from that format.
Wild. So Book of Exalted Deeds got banned officially by Wizards. And that, by the way, that actually prompted me to ask them, hey, can you maybe make the Gauntlets Standard 2022? If you're already banning cards, it's kind of a real format at that point. In any case, the reason Book of Exalted Deeds got banned, and first let me tell you what it does. It's white for an artifact. It says, at the beginning of your end step, if you gain 3 or more life, make a 3/3 angel. It's not why people were playing it for the most part. The reason they're playing it is it has the ability of white, tap, exile it, and put a divinity counter, I think is what it's called, I don't remember the counter name, on a target angel you control. As long as that angel is in play, you can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game. And as it happens, Faceless Haven, the land from Kaldheim, is an angel because it's all creature types. So the combo was, you use the Book of Exalted Deeds, you activated the Faceless Haven, you put a counter on it, and then you just let it sit in your land pile as a basically unkillable platinum angel. The reason that was so obnoxious is because the main reason is because it's best of one. The only queue on Arena is best of one, which also means it's untimed, which also means you'd have someone who couldn't win and their opponent couldn't lose, but the person who had the Faceless Haven with a counter on it had no way to win the game either. Presumably, they just sit there until someone gets bored, but when someone's playing right. that kind of obnoxious combo, there's a lot of people out there who are like, I'm just going to sit here then, you know, but like, cause you can end up with someone who like can't be decked. Let's say there's two of these lands facing off against each other, or you have some way to prevent yourself from being decked and literally there's no way for the game to end, or almost worse, you'll just get natural decked and you have no way to stop that, but it's going to take a long time.
Well, even if you get natural decked, you don't lose the game. You just stop making progress. You still don't lose the game.
Well, no, I mean, if they have the combo going and they have no way to actually kill you, but you're just going to get naturally decked
absolutely. Right.
But yeah, so that the main reason that this was an issue was that it's really obnoxious and it's in best of one. Though, I have to imagine if the format was played more in the best of three realm, this wouldn't even have been an issue at all.
Yeah, I mean, the interaction is powerful in just the most obvious sense of the term. I mean, the goal of the game is to win the game, and this combo has the potential to make it so one person can't lose. It's almost definitionally powerful to some extent. Whether or not it's efficient is a little bit sort of a different matter. In Pioneer, for instance, this combo has showed up just because in Pioneer, you can combine it with Mutavault, and so that's even cheaper. So, you know, right now, this combo is it's basically a six mana combo, but you need and in Pioneer it's just a four mana combo because Mutavault just costs one to activate, and so you get to pull it off a little bit earlier, and it's easier to sort of find those windows where in the game, because like one of the things that'll go on with this is that your opponent, if they have fast removal, is going to try to sort of kill your thing in response, or anytime it's a creature. The trick is you just don't make it a creature again. But yeah, obviously Arena is just a terrible platform to have infinite life combos on of any kind, or like can't lose the game. Because at least in paper and online, we can have a conversation about whether or not I can win the game, you can win the game. Maybe there's like a semaphore system that has been developed using emotes on Arena to communicate these kinds of conversations, but I don't think most players are fluent in them. At least I'm not yet. So it does make sense. It does seem like it's a combo that could potentially still just be too much. They put I would describe as a brave face with all of this, in that they said, like, to be clear, this wasn't an issue, and it wasn't in terms of it wasn't like showing up everywhere, and it wasn't winning that much. It's just too obnoxious, and it's like, okay. I mean, and the thing about best of three play, you said, is true, but there's still a ton of best of one play that's going to happen with the standard format in the future. This idea that that best of one is going to stop existing, that's not true. So we'll have to see. Setting that aside, so let's just assume for the sake of whatever that combo is just going to remain banned. I think if it got banned, like one of the things that's tough too is that like once you ban a combo of this nature, when somebody experiences it in the future, their reaction is going to be, why am I having to deal with this? I thought we all agreed this was nonsense when it happened a couple months ago, and it will probably happen again. Setting that aside, one issue I do want to touch on is that they decided not to give wild cards to players for this card, which I find to be outrageous. Basically, because you can still use this card in regular standard, their belief is that if you crafted it, you could still use it there. Who cares? Like, if somebody, all they wanted to do with this card was to play it in a deck that they liked for standard 2022, and now they just can't, and they don't have the wild cards from that they used on this to craft something else, I don't understand why that's okay. You made this card. You set up this queue for people to play in. Why are you judging them and deeming that their use in this queue is sort of like less valid than playing it in another queue? In general, anytime I think that they mess up on Arena and that somebody has a bad experience as a result, the customer should be the one who's, it's more important to make whole, not Watsy's wallets, but I don't know. Luis, I'm guessing you feel similarly.
Yeah, I mean, if you were playing in Historic and you got a card banned in Historic, you'd get a wild card for it. If you get a card banned in Standard, you get a wild card for it. I honestly don't know how it works in Brawl, if something is banned only in Brawl. But the way I kind of feel is, yeah, if something gets banned that you crafted or own, and you know you got it for that format, I think getting a wild card for it makes a lot of sense. I do think it'd be reasonable to say it only happens once per card. Like, you shouldn't get a wild card for this getting banned in Standard 2022. Then if it gets banned in Historic, get another one. But
well, like, you could easily make it so that it's one time per account.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But overall, yeah, I mean, it's a little disingenuous to say, like, well, people could still play in this other format. It's like, yeah, but they bought it to play in that format.
Right. Why? Yes.
I saw a good analogy, which is like, oh, well, we're not going to refund your concert ticket. There's still a band playing in the venue tonight. And it's like, well, I didn't buy a ticket to go see that band. I bought a ticket for a different one, and then you canceled it. And now there's a different one playing, and I want my money back. I thought that spoke to it pretty well.
The whole thing is pretty wild to me. And it's also just like true that one of the things with Arena is that they decided to, in order to promote players like getting a bigger collection, is that you can't, in other games, you can, some that have crafting systems, you could sometimes turn things you don't want into currency of lesser value than what you originally crafted it for. So it's not a free roll to craft things, but if you decide, hey, this wasn't for me, hey, I want to move on from this and try something else, you can get some of your currency back. They don't do that in Arena. Like, once you spend it, you spend it. And so the fact that they both don't have an out for players who are just not into this at all is, yeah. So I don't know. I think it's a bad look. I really don't even think it makes, like, presumably this is done because of, like, it's a precedent and help them make more money because the players have to spend more to get more cards. I just think it's just such a negative experience, and it just feels so petty that it's just not even worth what they're doing. But that's their decision. all right. So moving on from Book of the Exalted Deeds, let's actually now dig into what's going on in this format. So, and I would say the first big place, and this is the deck that sort of shows up some in Standard right now. It's top eight, one of the Standard challenges this weekend, is Mono Green Aggro. And so what you basically are going to imagine from this deck is a lot of cards with a whole lot of green pips. And no better place to start than one of the cards we identified as one of the best cards in Adventures of Forgotten Realms, Werewolf Pack Leader. That's the green-green two-drop that caught. That has a 3-3. It, when it attacks, if you attack with six or more power, you get to draw a card, and it's got a 4-mana activate ability where it becomes a 5-3 with trample until end of turn. And yeah, makes total sense that this card has made aggro much more popular. It turns out that if you give some people a 2-drop that's good against the best cheap removal spell in the format, Bonecrusher Giant, it's going to be both good in current Standard and just as a 3-3 with upside in the future, it's also going to be good.
That's certainly the card that stood out the most from Adventures in the Forgotten Realms when it comes to the mono green deck. And like you mentioned, the deck just picks up all the cards that cost lots of green mana, like a Old Growth Troll is also one that, you know, saw some play because mono green was popular for like 10 minutes earlier. But Old Growth Troll definitely does the job here. Because, I mean, this is a strong card. Green, green, green for a 4-4 trample. And when it dies, it dies into an aura that goes in one of your lands, makes that land tap for extra mana. And you can sack the land to make another 4-4 trample. So it kind of does it all. The only reason it hasn't been seeing play is that it's really not powerful enough to go mono green. Now that it is, because we've lost a lot of the powerhouses of the format, it's cool seeing the mono green deck really make some waves here. And I think it's kind of the consensus best deck at this point, or at least in the top couple.
Yeah, I mean, it's very efficient. I mean, this is also the kind of deck that is typically looks pretty well in at least in week one of formats when people are first building. Like, If you or I were trying to build a deck with Werewolf Pack Leader just in a future Standard format, in any Magic player that we know, we would build probably something like this. And we'll get to one of the reasons why it's mono green is the mana base. And the mana base is quite smooth. So we get 18 Snow-Covered Forests, and then we get 2 Faceless Havens and 2 Lair of the Hydras is sort of a common way people are building it right now. And it's nice to have a little bit of a mix there. You know, if you run this monocolor deck, more than most, has a lot of GG cards, like CC cards and CCC and Old Growth Troll. So while other monocolor decks are more consistently running Faceless Haven as a 4-of, this deck is one where you might want to consider running some Lair of the Hydras instead, because you get that ability to more consistently cast your heavily pipped cards. And the creature lands and snow lands sort of give you a ton of oomph. So rather than, you know, maybe picking up a nice gold card or maybe a good card or two in another color, we're just getting these awesome creature lands and a very smooth mana base. And so this is something I think we can expect to see a lot of, even if it's not green, is decks built around getting access to sort of consistent smooth mana, Faceless Haven, and potentially the creature land from Adventures of the Forgotten Realm.
I think one of the biggest things when looking at this format, and again, we don't know what lands are going to show up in Innistrad, but as of right now, the creature lands are huge. It's just a really powerful cycle of cards, and some of these mono-green decks run four Lair of the Hydra and zero Faceless Haven. Some run like two and two, as you said, but you're going to want to play a lot of creature lands because the drawback is negligible and the advantage is, or the upside is really big. So you are going to see a lot of decks either run this snow mana base for Haven or some combo of the creature lands, and that usually hinges on how many colors they are, though, of course, one of the other decks we're going to talk about, Izzet Dragons, manages to be two colors and still run Faceless Havens.
Yeah, the duels and multicolor lands, at least what we have right now, I would not describe as particularly strong or good towards facilitating three-color decks. We have the Pathways, and those are nice, but the big thing there is that if you are trying to play with cards that are like one green-green, or, you know, things like green-green, don't even think about three colors. And even still with two colors, it's going to be tricky. And then past that, we have the Snarls. Those are the sort of the lands which are, we have five of those, and they come into play untapped if you have one of their land types in your hand. And is there anything else? Oh, Fabled Passage left, the Triumphs left. Those are great ones to call out in terms of, those are two of the biggest things that have pushed people to being able to play the Sultai, Esper decks and current standard. But yeah, I don't think we have any other strong dual lands besides that. And also some of the traditional utility lands like the Castles are leaving. And so that's adding up to sort of these creature lands seeing a lot more play, because without Triumphs, without Castles, they are the best game in town in terms of spending extra mana from your lands.
And yeah, I mean, one of the things to keep in mind when you're looking forward, like to the future here, is that we will very likely get another set of lands, because we lost the temples too, right?
So oh yeah,
so we're gonna see another cycle of lands. So on the one hand, I would expect, you know, Izzet Dragons and mono green and like blue black to be players once we see what happens in Innistrad. But some of the decks that are on the sidelines right now, like you mentioned, some of the, you know, three-color decks just don't exist. Some of the two-color combinations that maybe aren't seeing play, it'll really depend on which lands we have, because the mana bases obviously affect what gets played so much. Like, you know, looking back towards original Theros, Mutavault was a card that basically stopped that whole format from being anything but monocolor, because it's so strong to play Mutavault in your monocolor deck. And lands really dictate what people get to cast, like both literally what colors they tap for, but then also when you look at Faceless Haven, that's like one of the big offenders here. For the record, I think Faceless Haven's fine, but it will force a lot of decks to really decide, do I want a second color? Shouldn't I just play one color and play Faceless Haven? For that reason, I really like the cycle of lands in Adventures of the Forgotten Realms, because they give you a creature land that you don't have to be monocolor to utilize. You could definitely play these cards in two-color decks just fine.
Yeah, and it is possible to sort of build out, with at least the tools we have, a smooth-ish two-color mana base, because you can play the lairs early untapped. The snarls, they can also come into play. They can come into play on tap next, and then you could follow it up with a basic. It is worth noting that the snow duels do have basic land types, so those will be give you a little bit of extra value if you play those in your deck in terms of facilitating it. The pathways are a little bit more awkward with something like the snarls, because they don't have both types. My guess is that if you are going to play three colors, it's going to be on very light splashes, where you are taking advantage of the pathway's ability to sort of deliver you that color only when you need it, but also come into play untapped quite often. The big downside is that it sort of just doesn't give you a lot of multiple colors in the same way that something like a Triumph does. So just other things of note about sort of what mono green has that makes it just, you know, pretty poppin', is that we get access to a couple of nice modal double face cards. You know, removing companions from the format is a really big deal in terms of your flexibility of having spells as the game goes on. You know, when you could just always spend three to bring in a Giganta for your deck, well, you can't do that as now in this format. But so things like Kazandu Mammoth and Tangled Florahedron do a nice job. And so I think we will expect to see this deck doesn't play Turn Timber Symbiosis, funny enough. And I think a bunch of that has to do with the fact that really a deck like this with Lair of the Hydra and Faceless Haven just doesn't exactly want painful. Well, I guess with Lair of the Hydra, you sort of want to play that one on turn one when you can more often. And so Turn Timber Samos as being a good turn one tap land, there's a little bit of conflict between those two. But yeah, so the other Asika's Chariot is a card that I can expect to see pick up a lot more value. I think basically like anything that was good at sort of generating value is something that you can expect to see a lot more of. Like anything where you could say like, is this card better or worse than Yuri and blinking a bunch of permanents or ultimatuming of one of those into a bunch of things? That is the kind of stuff that is leaving. And instead, you're going to actually need to find a way to sort of give you more juice as the game goes on.
I would actually even expand that as we're going through this. And you think about cards that didn't quite get there from, you know, Kaldheim or Strixhaven. And you look at them like Gnarled Professor is a card that is seeing play in these mono green decks, for example. Like the 5/4 trample for 4 that learns.
That one's a little harder to evaluate because the format's best of one. So it's not, I definitely agree that I think there's going to be a lot more room for it. At least there's one more slot without companions in your deck. But in a best of one format, it's like you don't even have to pay the cost of not having a real sideboard.
Definitely, definitely. And that was just a kind of example at random. But when you look at these last couple sets, you know, Glorious Protector, for example, the 4-mana 3/4 flash flyer, like that card was close. Of course that card was close. It wasn't that far away. I wouldn't be shocked if that card showed up. So, I mean, let me offer you some extremely, extremely limited financial advice, given that I'm far from an expert. This is probably about the time that you should either pay attention to Standard 2022 to pick up cards that are getting played there that weren't getting played in the current Standard, or on top of that, look at cards in these sets that will be legal next year that just were pushed out by the obscenely powerful cards from Throne of Eldraine, like, you know, Halvar God of Battle, for example. That even saw some play in this Standard for, again, a little bit. Starnheim Unleashed, like mythics from these sets that that didn't quite make the cut are probably a good thing to pick up if you want to make sure you have a robust collection. And because this is the time when the kind of like forgotten cards of these sets get to actually see the light of day. They survive rotation. So a lot of interesting,
yeah, I mean,
interesting opportunities there.
This stuff can be pretty crazy. I remember when I was a member of one of the Standard rotations, turned Desecration Demon and Night Vale Spectre from sort of junk rares from Return to Ravnica into $20 cards. It was just because it was like the format was like Desecration Demon was horrible against when people are playing a lot of Voice of Resurgence and Lingering Souls. And Night Vale Spectre had a tough time getting through. And then the format just completely changed in the post-rotation world. Yeah, you didn't want to attack a Night Vale Spectre and a Restoration Angel, let me tell you. All right. So yeah, you mentioned Is It Dragons a couple of times, and this is definitely a pretty popular deck. One of the things that's a common sort of holdover is that the decks that basically don't lose anything from rotation tend to show up a lot in week one or in these future-looking queues. And just Is It Dragons is the perfect example of this. Ilmarith Desert Doom is a pretty dope dragon. I personally think it's a weaker card than Goldspan Dragon. Not in all contexts and situations, but I expect to see... I think Goldspan Dragon is like sort of the generically stronger card. Just the amount of mana that a Goldspan Dragon can make is just so powerful. And in the Is It Dragons deck, we see that really well leveraged because of... foretell cards, and so we've got everything like Alrin's Epiphany, Saw It Coming, and that Behold the Multiverse, and that can just allow you to pull ahead in a way where, unlike with Limerith, which is drawing the cards just itself, Goldspan Dragon comes down, hits immediately, gives you those treasures, and then sort of allows you not only with Saw It Coming to protect itself in future turns, but also allows you to just maybe potentially stymie a key card that your opponent is trying to play that turn.
I wouldn't expect to see any other 5-drop dragon until after you've got the 4 Goldspan dragons. I agree that they are the first choice for that slot.
Yeah, yeah. And I we'll have to see, because one of the big things is that Ilmarith is just a 5/5. Goldspan dragon being a 4/4 is certainly vulnerable to a class of removal spells and blockers that Ilmarith is not. And so we'll have to see if there's a way that Ilmarith can take advantage of that potentially to see a little bit more play. Dragon's Fire is a card to be aware of. It's not, it's like this, it's the, this is the new two mana dragon removal spell. It's two mana for an instant that deals three to a creature, planeswalker. And if you reveal a dragon card or choose a dragon card when you cast the card, that you can, like, choose a dragon that you control, it deals damage equal to the power of that card or creature instead. Now, this card is, like, if we maybe get some dragons that are actually bigger, could be pretty big. Right now, it's, like, sort of not doing a ton unless you want to play with Ilmarith, just because it always deals three if you're playing with Galazeth, which these decks generally are. And then with Goldspan, it can get up to the fourth point. And so we'll have to see. If there is a key, something that takes five toughness to kill, playing with some bigger dragons that Dragon's Fire can get up to will be something to consider as you're sort of tuning this deck in both the current Standard 2022 and as we get to the fall.
You know what's one thing that's happened recently that I think is kind of interesting is it used to be that the two mana deal three was never that exciting for Standard. Like, it just didn't see that much play. Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't, but it's over the past like 2 years now, it feels like the two mana deal three common slot has been actually quite strong. You know, Scorching Dragonfire saw a lot of play, and Dragon's Fire here, very, very similar names, also looks like it's poised to see some good action, just because two mana deal three, especially the ones that can hit like planeswalkers as well, which is starting to be all of them, that's pretty good and flexible. And then the fact that sometimes it can do five damage is pretty huge.
Yeah, it definitely was. I remember when I first started playing, it was just Lightning Strike and Searing Spear, and it was like one of those two for just a while. It's nice if when they have sort of different abilities, like you mentioned, that can potentially allow you to sort of be better versus certain things, whether it's, you know, exiling something, Dragon's Fire, like Scorching Dragonfire does, or with, in the case of Dragon's Fire, can deal a little bit of damage. All right. So next up, obviously, you know, we're going to have some control decks in the new format. So what are sort of the key cards to build around with control? Obviously, I think we're going to finally see with something like Yorian leaving the format is the Fortel package become a lot more prominent in traditional control shells. And so I think first off, you want to just talk about things like Saw It Coming, Behold the Multiverse, Poison the Cup. These cards are all just fantastic because they allow you to spend your mana early on in the game and then get an advantage later. And without something like Yorian, as I mentioned, that's just a lot better.
You actually have the opportunity to play a bunch of spells and not be forced into playing a bunch of permanents, which is what Yorian did. And Yorian was kind of the dominant way to build control decks ever since it got printed. Like even that the Dimir control decks that saw a little bit of play were kind of bullied into playing Yorian Omen of the Sea just because, like, it's still better to do all that. And I'm looking forward to more diversity among deck choices where you don't all have to look at, okay, well, we put all the cards in that work with Yorian, and then we have a few slots. So, yeah, I mean, you're seeing stuff like all the spells you mentioned, Blood in the Snow, Crippling Fear. Like, there's just a lot of different cards, and we're going to go back to, at least for now, more of a traditional shell that actually even has planeswalkers like Mordenkainen. So pretty cool stuff that to see a deck with like sweepers removal and planeswalkers that doesn't kill you with just like an Emergent Ultimatum or whatever. That those decks never felt like, you know, traditional control decks. And one of the things that I think we should note about this format, just looking at the format overall, is it is heavily creature dominated. Every deck either plays a bunch of creatures or is trying to like take advantage of that and play like very few creatures like the control decks. But the vast majority of decks, tons of creatures. You know, you put a card like Flunk, which is a card that sees a lot of play in this format. You put a card like Flunk in your deck, you're going to have targets for it. You don't really even have to worry about it. So a lot of removal here. You're going to see the control decks loaded to the gills on removal and then see the aggro decks, of course, trying to play tons of threats to get around that removal. But it's a very different balance than some previous formats where playing too much removal means you are super vulnerable to a large class of decks.
Well, speaking of classes, that is one of the directions that creature-based strategies will be able to look to if they are trying to make themselves better against all removal. And it's one of the strong points about Mono Green that we didn't touch upon is Ranger class. And the classes are, we haven't talked too much about this on this show about them, but yeah, they're a new type of enchantment that allow you to sink more mana into them to get them up to level start. They start at level 1, then you can pay two more mana, get them up to level two, and then pay a bit more mana, get them up to level three. Like the third mode on Ranger class, what it ultimately can do is it gives you a wolf. Then when you attack the creature, you put a +1/+1 counter on target attacking creature. And then the final mode turns it into a sort of one of those like experimental frenzy type effects. You may look at the top card of your library anytime you may cast creature spells from the top of your library. That is exactly the kind of thing I want against somebody playing a million Doomblades against me out of a Dimir deck. Like, what are they going to do against that if they can't counter it coming down?
Oh, yeah. I've played against Ranger class and with it a bunch in Limited. And I think in Constructed, it's going to play it a very similar way. Early pressure, especially once you get the level 2 ability, which is you get a +1/+1 counter on attacking creature every time you attack. You know, your opponent has to deal with all these threats, but when they're on the back foot dealing with them, you can level it up to three and just have a steady stream of creatures. I can't really imagine an Izzet or Dimir control deck out grinding a level 3 Rangers class without putting them under a pretty quick clock, which is where, you know, in Izzet things like Goldspan Dragon come in. But the Dimir deck is a little bit more vulnerable to that, because without getting one of your like Professor Onyx or Mordenkainen big Planeswalkers going, it's going to be hard to beat a mono green deck that's playing 1 to 2 to maybe 3 free creatures every single turn.
Yeah, I mean, when you look, like decks have been able to rely on things like Ugin, or our Dimir deck can, you know, splash green on the cheap to get Binding of the Old Gods. And just that's both Ugin is rotating out and Binding of the Old Gods, a lot harder to splash into your Dimir deck, but not impossible by any means. So definitely something you should keep in mind if you're trying to be a little bit better against that. Next up, let's touch on mono white. And this is obviously a current standby and sort of standout in standard. And so it's no surprise to see that this is going to continue to potentially show up in future standard. Cards like Luminarch Aspirant, Elite Spellbinder, Skyclave Apparition, these cards have not only been staples of mono white in current standard, but these cards are showing up in Pioneer, they're showing up in Modern, so not a shock to see them continuing to be the foundation of what white decks can do in a future standard format.
This is the deck that I think most looks like every other white weenie deck in history. It just this is what white weenie decks look like.
Yeah, and Archpriest of Iona and the party mechanic that we saw in Zendikar Rising is one that we haven't seen show up too much. But some of these mono color decks can take advantage of a little bit of party support, and that's something to keep in mind with some of your card choices. Is there's like basically some amount of party cards in each color, and even in mono color decks, if it's just something like Archpriest of Iona, it can definitely get across the finish line if you're also pairing it up with Faceless Haven, because maybe there's a type that you don't quite have, but then Faceless Haven being all of the types gets you there.
Yeah, that you know, it's little synergies like that upon which decks are built, right? It's just all these little things that, like, you ever look at a deck, you're like, wow, it's pretty neat those work together. It's like, well, if they didn't, this deck might not exist. And it's not just any one of them, but it's just like the kind of the accumulation of all of them that makes, well, real decks feel like real decks.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's not just about comparing, like, what is the most... Sometimes it's just about what is the most powerful thing to do, because everything is coming together really well. But especially in smaller set standard formats, and by that I mean when we only have 5 sets in standard, which is what we're going to be facing when Midnight Hunt joins this 4-set future standard-looking format, it just means that there's going to be a little bit of scrappiness going on. And so the ability to gain a little bit of extra synergy from your lands with your creatures is the kind of thing that can actually get you to that critical level of consistency. It's kind of funny, this one of the mono white lists that we pulled together is playing with Monk of the Open Hand, but is not playing with the Planeswalker that fetches it up. But because that one seems like a pretty dope way out of white decks to be good against some of the all removal strategies. But, you know, I think it's just like a baseline. When you get to play with just Faceless Haven and Cave of the Frost Dragon and mono white, you're always going to be pretty good against the all removal decks, because virtually your lands are just sort of like cantripping you into threats in the late game.
A card that some of these white decks splash for that is on my list of like cards to really watch out for post rotation and even now in Standard 2022 is Shodan of the Skalds. It's the best card in the Naya deck, which maybe not saying much given that the Naya deck wasn't the most successful deck I've ever played. But It's definitely a card that's worth looking at splashing in mono white, like going to Boros. You know, the Rakdos Sack deck was already touching white a little bit to cast Extus Auric Overlord, which is like the flip side of Awakening the Blood Avatar. And getting Shirt of the Skulls there is also pretty enticing. Shirt of the Skulls is just a card that actually could make it in previous standard and that didn't have anything to do with the previous standard's themes. That's a powerful card. You should be looking at that card and thinking about how can I best use this card.
Yeah, I think the real sort of litmus test for the format is going to be, is that gold card that you are splashing off of something like a Snarl, and your aggro deck off of something like a Snarl and some Pathways, actually worth playing when you compare to the option of just going full on monocolor? Because once we get into playing Snarls and Pathways, we're going to need to only probably play with the creature land of our colors, of our main color, and we're not going to be able to play with Faceless Haven. So in the case of this deck, you could be playing with Cave of the Frost Dragon. That one I am not impressed with at all. I think it is the weakest of the five. And so for me, my guess would be, and this is definitely something you should test, but my guess would be is that, hey, let's take out these Showdown of the Skulls. If you need some more grinding, put in Grandmaster of Flowers, and let's go with Faceless Haven.
Yeah, it's a pretty big cost to miss out on Faceless Haven, and I agree that Cave of the Frost Dragon does not quite cut the mustard.
All right, well, we'll leave that condiment on the side. all right, next up, let's hit up Rakdos. And Rakdos, I think, is one of the more interesting color pairs in the new standard format. And one of the reasons why Rakdos is a thing is we are losing Kroxa, so no longer that's just sort of pulling us into it. But for me, Rakdos is interesting because of the treasure package that we can get. And so some of the treasure cards that are worth talking about are like Kalain, Reclusive Painter. This is the 2-mana 1/2 that ETB gives you a treasure. Whenever you play a creature, it gets a 1/1 counter for each mana from a treasure spent to cast it. We can integrate some sacrifice synergies and play things like Shambling Ghast. That it has a death trigger that can either get something -1/-1 and give you a treasure. And so it can really all tie things together. You can play Magda, Goldspan Dragon to get more treasures. And so we can really start popping off with different cards which are either making treasures or using them differently, like something like Kalain and Goldspan Dragon can do. And even a card like Deadly Dispute, which is a 2-mana sack an artifact or creature to draw 2 cards and create a treasure token, we're sort of now finding ways to turn our treasures into more cards. And so we're interweaving all of these different synergies. And it's not like it's my deck is trying to do this thing or that thing. It's that I am playing a collection of cards. They have sort of a common theme. And then I get to use them in creative ways, depending upon which way the game's going. Orcus, Prince of Undeath is a really potentially powerful X card in Rakdos that makes excellent use of extra mana from treasures. This card is X, 2 black, red for a 5/3 flying trample. And when it comes into play, you can either make everything -X/-X besides himself until end of turn and you lose X life, or you can return up to X target creature cards with total mana value X or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. They gain haste until end of turn. Let me tell you, the second mode is where it is at. That is the one you are playing this for. That first mode, like let's do a little Toxic Deluge action, that's fine. It's cool. Like, it's nice if you're falling behind in mono white aggro, you could sweep them all up. But holy cow, that second ability is uber powerful.
Well, I would argue that you're also playing it for the actual first mode of 4-mana 5/3 flying trample. Like,
no, I want to bring back like 5 creatures when I play this for X equals 5. Well,
what's powerful about this card is it can do all those things. But yes.
Oh, okay. All right. So Drew, it's kind of, this is a weird feeling when you're sort of like reigning in the dreaming in the greed, but okay.
Well, I'm looking at this deck and it manages to thread the needle a little bit where it like it's got a lot of value cards. Like you don't think of spending 2 mana and sacking a creature to draw 2 cards as an aggressive play because it's kind of the opposite. But it's also a deck that can realistically put a lot of pressure on the opponent. You know, and Orcus can help do that. Another reason this deck, I think, has kind of emerged at the forefront here is it was a deck before Standard 2022. This was actually a deck that saw like this is a very small amount of play in previous Standard. I actually remember one of the CFP Pro Showdowns getting won by this deck and when I was doing coverage. And when that happens, you can look at things like Kalane and Orcus and be like, wow, these are some really good additions to a deck that was like basically almost there. So not surprised to see Rakdos. And I think having a good black-red sac deck is usually pretty awesome. Those decks are just, they play out well. Like, no one ever hates them, right? Like, how do you hate a deck that's like trying to combine scrappy little Eye Twitches and Fireblade Chargers with sac effects and using Lesson and Learn to actually get lessons? Like, it's all really cool when you put it together.
Yeah, it's nice when it's about like kind of using them together to suit your needs and make something cool happen. It was certainly got pretty intense at times when it was like, claim your firstborn, sack this Cauldron Familiar, sack it a couple more times, ping down all of your other creatures, bam, devil.
Mea culpa, I did forget that the standard version of Rakdos Sacrifice was annoying as hell when it had Witch's Oven and Cauldron Familiar. I will blame that on Witch's Oven, Cauldron Familiar, though.
What were the Pioneer and Historic versions not also annoying?
No, I don't think so, because like those were in a format where you could do some other powerful things. Like playing against the Rakdos or Jund food decks when you were playing like the Time Warp deck, it was a joke. It was so easy to beat them. Like when they want to play small ball and people can go way over the top, that's one thing. This is standard though. You don't usually get, like, at least right now, you're not usually getting the opportunity to do that in standard 2022 because most of the decks are. Again, this is kind of a return to fundamental Magic, which is, I think, what part of what appeals to everyone. Mono green aggro, mono white aggro, blue black control, red blue tempo. You know, Ida Dragon's actually more on the control side than the tempo side, but whatever. It's all like very much the kind of building blocks of Magic and how some of these like classic archetypes play out. And they're not dominated by like Sultai Ultimatum, which is just like a weird three-color deck that's just casting a 7-mana spell that wins the game. Rogues, you know, like, not saying that those decks are intrinsically bad. We're sick of them because they've been around for so long. But you look at 2022 decks and like, they're all really classic archetypes. And I think that's something that's really appealing to people who have been looking for a kind of reason to play Standard again.
Yeah, I mean, the more normal sort of we get the decks to be, the more likely it is that we're going to get to see these modal double face cards that are sort of giving you niche effects that are useful in some amount of games, but not others, be sort of the thing that is going on. And when our cards are trading off, you know, getting a slightly inefficient card out of our land is the kind of thing that matters. When it's like, I'm going to the moon with ramping and drawing a million cards with Yorian and all that sort of stuff, that's where the sort of flexibility of kicker cards and modal double face cards is. It falls a little bit by the wayside. So yeah, that's definitely a great point.
So rounding out what we wanted to look at here, I think Orzhov Angels, that was one that Huey wrote a deck guide on for CFB. And I thought that deck looked pretty cool. It makes use of, a mix of angels as well as some kind of powerful cards that haven't seen much play, like Furia's Retribution from Kaldheim, the saga, the black-white saga that makes a 4-4 and then lets your angels kill things and gives them double strike and flying, that sort of thing. Along with like Luminarch Aspirant, that's a card, by the way, that's going to be an all-star. Like Luminarch Aspirant's already great. It will continue to be great. And then one of the cards that I think is from like a Kaldheim Commander set, which is Youthful Valkyrie. That's a 1 and a white for a 1/3 angel with flying. And whenever another angel enters the battlefield under your control, you put a +1/+1 counter on Youthful Valkyrie. It's funny. It's a $5 uncommon. Cause again, I think it's like a commander card or like a planeswalker deck card or whatever the precon thing is.
Yeah. It was not in Kaldheim proper.
No,
at least
Kaldheim, right?
Yeah. One of the things like you got to watch out for with, you know, some of these future decks is like, well, wait, is this deck going to get more stuff from just like some Innistrad sets coming up? But the good news is that Innistrad is actually home to just a lot of angels. And so we've seen them in the past a bunch of times, whether it's, you know, Avacyn, who's, now dead, but doesn't mean all the other angels are. And so it definitely a strong possibility that we will get even more cards that can work with things like Youthful Valkyrie or Righteous Valkyrie.
Righteous Valkyrie, by the way, is a card that has seen historic play. So, you know, in the Valkyrie or the Angels Collected Company deck that can just all of a sudden attack you for a million damage on turn 4 after accompanying into multiple things. And this is a cool tribal deck that I think it's probably a little behind Mono White in terms of overall like staying power, but it has some cool stuff going on. And overall, like the combination of good removal and good mid-range threats is again, just like a classic pairing that you're going to see a fair amount of.
All right. And Goblins is a bit of a deck that people have been toying around with because there are some new Goblin synergy cards in Adventures of the Forgotten Realms. I would say that the strongest one of these is Hobgoblin Bandit Lord. One red, other goblins you control get +1/+1. It's a 2/3. And it has red tap. Hobgoblin Bandit Lord deals damage equal to the number of goblins that entered the battlefield under your control this turn to any target. And so with Hobgoblin Bandit Lord, we can potentially turn things that make a bunch of goblin tokens the next turn into a real nice removal spell. If we play something like you see a pair of goblins and get two goblins, we just pay red and tap, and you could just have this Hobgoblin Bandit Lord turn into just a deal two that, and it's, so it's repeatable too. So there's a lot of nice things going on with this. Battlecry Goblin is another new card, 2 mana, 2/2 goblin. It has one of the red goblins you control get +1/+1 and gain haste until end of turn. And then it has whenever Battlecry Goblin attacks, if you attacked with creatures with total power 6 or greater this combat, create a 1/1 red goblin creature token that's tapped and attacking. And I really love that what is awesome about Battlecry Goblin is that it's not just that it's like, oh, I play this card one way, it's really, really strong, is that there's power in the way that you play. You can play this card on turn 2 if you don't have a 2-drop, but later on in the game, when you have a little bit more mana, you can play this as a virtual 4-drop. It gives itself haste with its activated ability, and then it has the potential, just from activating, to immediately turn on its pack attacks trigger, that 6 power or greater. So now we're putting out multiple goblins this turn, turning on our Hobgoblin Bandit Lord. I would say the biggest bad news for this deck is that, well, goblin's not a type we've seen on Innistrad in the past. Now, it's not impossible they'll come to Innistrad. We had the Eldrazi come there, but at the very least, this is not a deck that it stands to improve substantially with the next few sets. But, you know, there will be more sets in Standard beyond just the Innistrad ones, and maybe they'll have some goblins along the way too.
Goblins are a tribe that you know, it's, you always think they're out, but they're like cockroaches. They all survive. I will say Battlecry Goblin, after playing with it a bunch in Limited, is just a nuts card. That card is way more powerful than you think by looking at it. It brings you the army. It gives it all haste. It pumps everything. It works with existing goblins. It creates more if you need them. Like, overall, it does not surprise me that this card is seeing some play, even if it's in like a relatively niche deck, just because a card that does all that for as much mana as it costs is something that you should look to try to utilize.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's not like red is like flooded with good, cheap creatures anyway. There's some real just garbage that you just put in your deck. Hall Monitors and Fireblade Chargers and stuff like that. Like, look at these cards. Like, obviously they're subsidized by the fact that red has Torbrands and right now Embercleaves, you know, before rotation, that kind of stuff. But like, overall, like, red can get by on some pretty weak creatures, and Goblin Battlecry Goblin is not the worst of them by any stretch.
Yeah, I mean, mono red is just a deck that in current Standard is just gone. Like, it, not that there won't be a red deck in the future, but it's the deck that is like sort of stands the most from at least what we'll get from the Innistrad set. It's kind of hard to even give a prediction about it because it's just like, you look at the mono red list that people are playing nowadays, and it's like Fervent Champion, Rimrock Knight, Robber of the Rich, Annex, Bonecrusher Giant, Torbrand, Embercleave. Literally all of those cards are rotating. Fireblade Charger is the only mono red staple that I know of, really, that is just sticking around.
Well, as long as the best one's still legal.
Yeah.
So let's chat a little bit about the format before we wrap up. I also do want to give a shout out to MTGA Zone. They had a lot of awesome Standard 2022 content, like when we were doing research, like, you know, reading articles on CFB and looking at MTG Melee decklists. MTGA Zone did a really good job of putting a lot of this data together. So I do want to give them a shout out. If you're interested in Standard 2022, definitely a good place to check out. Of course, Channel Fireball has plenty of articles as well, but I did want to give them props. So we kind of covered a little that, like, the format's extremely creature dominated. You really can't go wrong by putting creature removal in your deck. If you're like deciding, oh, do I need another piece? It's not a bad idea to do that. I would say take a good look at anything that is either in current standard that's seeing play, like Shorn of the Scalds for, is a card like that, or cards that, again, barely miss, Starnheim Unleashed, Blood on the Snow, you know, Poison the Cup, a lot of those cards that I think were looked pretty close, but, you know, didn't end up making there. Like Doomscar is a card I wouldn't be surprised if it was great in this format. And I would also look at really how restrictive the mana is. There's a reason you're not seeing, again, three-color decks at all. And even then, two-color decks, a lot of the times, it's like you're giving up the best creature land in the format. Faceless Haven is the best creature land. Like, it's not close. The ones from Adventure of the Forgotten Realms are definitely playable and in some cases quite good. They're just not on the same level as Faceless Haven. They come with the upside of you can actually play more than one color. Though some decks play two-color Faceless Haven. It's not very often. It's just really, is it Dragons for the most part? So overall, you should take a look at, like, what are you giving up and which creature lands are you going to play? You have to play a creature land. I don't think we had a deck on this list that had no creature lands in it. You know, and
yeah, it's just... Yeah, I mean, a great place to stand is to always understand what your mana base allows and what you can get out, extra juice you can get out of it. And right now it's creature lands, creature lands, creature lands. And largely that's also going to back up playing with a creature-centric strategy. You certainly get a lot more value out of playing with a creature land if you haven't tried to strand the removal all game.
So I also think that if you want to play Best of One, it's got the Arena Queue, of course, do that. If you don't enjoy Best of One and you want to play Best of Three, a lot of the like third party tournaments you'll find on Melee, you know, that we'll have Best of Three offerings. So you can check those out. I would hope to see a Best of Three queue. Cause look, at the end of the day, Wizards should, it's kind of like a dictionary, right? Like when someone says, hey, that's not a word, is it in the dictionary? It's like, well, the dictionary evolves with how people actually speak, right? Eventually you see words added to the dictionary that, you know, selfie or meme, like meme was a word that was invented, you know, that what it didn't exist for that long. And likewise, I think it's in WotC's best interest to go with the flow in terms of what people want to play. Like Commander was a format that was called Elder Dragon Highlander. It wasn't invented by them, but obviously it's just the most powerful, most popular and powerful, I suppose, format. People want to play Standard 2022. I think having a Best of Three queue for it would be awesome because that is what a lot of people have shown willingness to do. Should they rotate early is a big question. I don't know what your thoughts on that are. My guess is they probably shouldn't. It wouldn't necessarily be correct, but I don't know. It's tempting. The Magic player in me wants to say yes because I do not want to play another game with any of these thrown cards.
I mean, it's just like, what's the upside, right? Like, is it just to like dunk on how bad Standard is? Like, okay.
Yeah.
Is it to make it so that you can like gain ranks on Arena with it? It's like, I mean, sure, that's nice. It's not like this is like the biggest deal in the world. It's a very disruptive, destabilizing thing. So I don't know. It's fine. It's not like it's a disaster to support to like make it the thing, I guess it's not a disaster to leave this status quo as it is, it feels like to me, and to maybe even include a little bit more support for this format on Arena, but it seems like there's relatively little upside to just basically trying to make Dogma. Like, what does it mean to rotate Standard? Does it just mean that you can't play current Standard? What's the upside in that for the people who are still enjoying it and are still interested in exploring these cards one last time?
Where we're dunking on how bad Standard is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. So that's sort of my take on that.
I mean, you really have to hand it to them, but in this case, I do agree that they shouldn't rotate early.
Right. Like, it's bad when it's something like we have this major tournament and it's, you know, this thing that's going to be really rough to test for. Most of us are not living the extremely blessed life of getting to live out their dreams in the Rivals and MPL League, and so we're not going to be playing in these gauntlets.
Yeah, I'm living the dream over here, buddy. I will say I am grateful that I have high-stakes tournaments to play in, because I know not everyone has access to those. I've thought that was nonsense. I've said that so many times over the last 2 years, but we don't have to rehash that.
All right. Yep, but definitely Standard looks like it's got some interesting things going on. And I would say the biggest thing is that these decks all look relatively baseline and that there's nothing like currently like breaking the format. And so what that means is that there's definitely some potential for some synergies to emerge that could be a little bit better than just sort of playing the best curve of cards in a sort of traditional aggro or traditional just like two color deck for that pairing. And so that is sort of the thing that is going to be the next step in terms of both looking at these synergies that existed in the past year, maybe did well in some limited formats, but never showed up in standard, were too weak to compete with Throne of Eldraine and Companions. And then additionally, the same sort of thing when we get to Midnight Hunt in the fall.
Yeah, this is a cool episode taking a look at, you know, a format I didn't think would have legs. Like, it just, this is barely supported by WotC. I mean, the queue on Arena definitely obviously goes a long way there, but this is a kind of like a fan format in a lot of ways. It just feels so organic how many people want to play this and not want to play current standards. It's kind of funny getting to do a little deep dive into this. Hope you enjoyed it. And of course, we'll be back next week. You can find us online. I'm at LSV on Twitter. BK's at ABext. And yeah. Hit us up if you have any questions about Constructed. And if they're easy to answer, send them my way. If they're a little tougher to answer, you know, you can send them BK's way. But we'll see you next week.
So I'm excited, Luis. This weekend, I think we're going to get our first taste of paper play in store. I think it sounds like we're going to go to a pre-release. And I am particularly excited. I'm just curious. For yourself, and I'll give my answer if you want to take a second to think about yours, sort of what is the thing that you most miss about playing in paper? And for me, I would say that it is the sort of getting to see the sort of expression of my opponent's face when I've been planning out something and building towards something, and then I sort of reveal like what was about to happen or what I've been building to this whole time, and not exactly the same thing. And, That is definitely something that I'm looking forward to getting to play against an opponent, because the little bit of paper magic that I have played since the pandemic has basically been against my friends, and I basically know what you all are going to do at this point. I've spent way too much time talking with all of you in the past year and a half.
I think the thing that I most am looking forward to is needing to borrow dice and pens from did you bring the dungeon cards? Because I didn't grab any of those from the...
I you say that, and then I know that what's going to end up happening is you're going to like take a piece of life pad and you're going to know what the dungeon is, and you're going to like write out the boxes and just sort of scribble them in because you'll have them in your head.
Oh yeah, I think I know what all the rooms do and all of what they're called, but let's not test me on it right now.
Yes, that would certainly be in stark contrast to when we did our preview episode of Adventures of Forgotten Realms.